The headlines this morning are lurid. Treat hate preachers like child molesters. They're based on a speech that David Cameron's going to make today, setting out in more detail than he's done so far the new powers to be given to the authorities to crack down on extremist Islamists. It is, he will say, the struggle of our generation. And no one would argue that children, above all, should be protected. But protected against what, precisely? Well, I'm joined by the Home Secretary, Theresa May. Good morning to you.
Good morning, John.
And let's talk first about the definition of extremism, because the government's definition, as I understand it, is something like the vocal or active opposition to fundamental British values, including democracy, the rule of law, individual liberty, and the mutual respect and tolerance of different faiths and beliefs. Is that how you view it?
That is
or
the definition.
Them, rather.
Yeah. Well, that is the definition of extremism that the government has used since 2011. That we put that in when the Prevent strategy was reviewed in 2011, and that's the definition that is in the counter-extremism strategy. But of course, the strategy we're launching today is a very wide-ranging strategy, which covers not just Islamist extremism, it also covers neo-Nazi extremism. And we're doing this for a very good reason. I think we face an unprecedented threat from extremism, and you can see when groups like ISIL are able, through the internet, to send their perverted message into family homes, and we see men and women, and indeed whole families, going out to Syria. I think this shows we need to step up our ability to counter extremism. But also, if you look last week at the figures on hate crime, we saw a significant rise in reported hate crime. And that's why the strategy is about all forms of extremism, and also and shows that, you know, harm from extremism isn't just about terrorism.
There is a problem, though, isn't there, conflating terrorism, extremism and hate crime. If somebody hates the idea, for instance, of gay marriage, which is, of course, legal, and they rail against it in one form or another, are they guilty of a hate crime?
No, this isn't about people having different views, different beliefs. It's not about people saying things that some people don't agree with. That debate is part of freedom of speech, and that debate is part of our democracy. It underpins our society. What this is about those whose extremist message is there in order to try and spread hatred and to divide communities. And that can, of course, lead to violence, but it also leads to other harms, as we've seen, as I say, with the increase in recorded hate crimes.
So how would you deal then with Muslim parents who object strongly, as many of them do, to the teaching of anti-homophobia in schools?
Well, if you're talking about what is going on, obviously, when we see the curriculum in schools, we have a basic curriculum in schools. People have a right to have their views about certain aspects of life in our society. That's not what this strategy is about. Debate, healthy debate, is part of our democracy. People are, of course, entitled to hold different views. Some people will hold views that others will find objectionable. That's not what we're talking about in this strategy. What we're talking about is those people whose extremist views are promoted in a way in order to encourage hatred and division in our communities.
In order to encourage hatred. That's a bit of a dangerously loose phrase in a way. Let me quote you what Jonathan Evans, Lord Evans, former head of the Security Service, MI5, wrote in The Telegraph recently. One can imagine the powers being used against harmless evangelical street preachers or the like out of misplaced zeal and a desire to demonstrate that they are not directed against one religion alone.
No, this is not what the strategy is about.
He's got it
wrong. Course, it's assuming that there are two things here. First of all, we're not talking, as I said, about somebody who stands up and says something that other people might not agree with or might find objectionable. But also, we're not just talking about taking powers against extremists. There are four areas of action that we identify within the strategy. One is about countering the extremist narrative, countering the extremist ideology. Another is actually about working with community groups to promote mainstream voices. Then there's powers to disrupt extremists, but also looking at building more cohesive communities. And underpinning this is something which is very important, which is a very positive promotion of the values that we share, the values that actually make our pluralistic society what it is and such a great place to live.
The problem is, though, if the former head of MI5 and indeed your own security minister, Dominic Raab, is uncertain about where this is going, there is going to be a problem, isn't there? Let me quote you what Dominic Raab said. The broad powers of proposed extremist interdiction orders, that is, EDOs, could be abused. Those engaged in passionate debate, such as Christians, again, objecting to gay marriage, can find themselves slapped down. Or communist leaders like the late Bob Crowe, for instance, could find themselves in trouble.
No, that's not what this is about.
But it's worrying, by the way, isn't it worrying, if the very people who are meant to enforce these laws are uncertain about what they mean, we have a problem, don't we?
Well, first of all, can I just say Dominic Raab isn't the security minister. He is a minister in the Justice Minister.
Yeah.
Sorry, yes, I misheard then. This is, obviously, in terms of the powers in looking at things like the extremist disruption orders, we will be bringing forward proposals in relation to that in due course. We are taking our time to make sure that we get any legislation right, to make sure that we're able to frame it in a way that doesn't lead to unintended consequences. But that is just one small part of this strategy.
Very, very important part of it, you'd be creating a divided society.
But no, John, you say it's an important part of it, and of course we wouldn't be putting it in and wouldn't be proposing it if we didn't think it was important. But it is essential that people, I think, recognise and see the wider elements of this strategy, because just as important is the working with mainstream, with community groups and to promote mainstream voices. And for example, I was in Birmingham a few weeks ago and I met a number of community groups who are out there in a variety of ways working against extremism. So Upstanding Neighbourhoods, for example, I talk to people who actually go out on the street and challenge extremist ideology. I met other groups who were working with vulnerable young people, vulnerable, of course, potentially not just to extremism, but to other forms like gang violence and so forth. So actually out there on the streets. And if you talk to, as I have, if you talk to parents of young people who have been on the path to radicalisation, or perhaps parents, as I've heard from, who have got children who've gone out to Syria, some of whom have died out there fighting, then they are saying that they want to see more action taken. They want themselves within their communities to be able to take more action, and the government will be supporting them in doing it.
And there would be greater powers to remove passports from those children whom we might regard as being at risk. But again, the danger is, what does that mean if they suddenly start going to, I don't know, a fairly radical mosque or something? Might they then be deemed to be at risk? Who's going to make this judgment as to whether they're at risk or not?
Well, power that you're talking about, that we're talking about extending, the Prime Minister will be talking about extending today, is the power that parents have to be able to ask the authorities to remove the passport of a young person. That will be extended to those who are 16 and 17.
Could be a real risk of it being divisive, couldn't it?
Well, but I think parents who have, I've just talked about parents who've seen their children go out to Syria and who've seen their children get involved in fighting, some of whom have died. I'm sure those parents would have wanted to be able to take some action.
But it mightn't be just a parent, might it? It might be a teacher who says, I'm a little bit worried about how this young man is behaving, or whatever it happens to be. It's a difficult call, is what I'm saying.
Well, I'm not pretending that any of this is easy. Of course this is difficult, but government has a choice here. We can either say, well, this is difficult, so let's not do anything, or we can say, actually, it is difficult, but this is so important that we need to
take
action.
The danger, though, is that
Cameron said in his, as he said in his party conference speech, you know, this government is not just about dealing with economic problems, it's dealing with social problems, and one of the greatest social problems at the moment is extremism.
But if you alienate a large and growing section of society, a great many Muslim people who feel you're out to get them, that is dangerous in and of itself.
But this is not about that. This is about actually supporting...
That's the point I'm putting to you. I mean, maybe your intentions, no doubt your intentions are absolutely admirable, but it's how it's going to be seen in the community.
No, I don't think it is how it's going to be seen in the community. And when I talk to people in the Muslim community who are out there themselves working against extremism, they will welcome support and welcome the fact that the government is saying this is an important issue we need to deal with. And of course, the very people who are going to be protected, many of the people who will be protected, are people in Muslim communities. communities who either are at danger or see their young people at danger of radicalisation, but who are also on the receiving end of the sort of extremist attitudes that we see from neo-Nazis. One of the things we're doing that we announced, the Prime Minister announced last week, is that we're going to be recording, the police will be recording anti-Muslim hate crime separately for the first time. So we actually get a better picture of that than we've had up till now. But that those people in Muslim communities who are on the receiving end of that type of hatred that comes from an extremist view. And it's dealing with those extremist views that is what the extremism countering extremism strategy is about. We don't want it to get to the point of being a hate crime. We want to be able to have dealt with those views first.
Can I talk to you about something quite different? Operation Midland, you'll know all about that. It's the police operation under which the former Home Secretary, Liam Britton, was accused of being a paedophile, and we know what happened to him. And I don't know whether you would agree that what happened to him was disgraceful.
Well, the decisions in relation to looking into allegations are for the police and for the police to take.
He was accused of rape.
Somebody had come forward with an accusation. And what we have seen in recent months and is continuing is we are seeing more people coming forward with allegations of sexual abuse of various sorts. And of course, it includes children who perhaps have been sexually abused in the past, who are now adults, but also people today who are subject to sexual abuse. I think it is very important that we enable people to come forward with their allegations. Where there are allegations,
so do you know Ms. Biddings then about what's been happening?
Well, John, if we look, let's just look at what's happened in the past. What has happened in the past is that people who have come forward with allegations of sexual abuse of a variety of types, be it child sexual abuse or indeed rape, have very often felt that they've been sidelined, they've been pushed to one side, they've been ignored and
so
not
So, no, it's open season. So, anybody no, it's who not, makes an accusation may destroy somebody's reputation.
No, it's not open season. And this is why I say, if I can just complete the picture here, if somebody comes forward with an allegation, it is right that the police deal with that allegation.
Well, I think we know.
We have set up an entire Justice Goddard's inquiry on child sexual abuse because it's important that we learn the lessons of why we have seen institutions in this country, some of whose very job was a duty of care to children, have failed to exercise that care for those children and sexual abuse has taken place. But when the police investigate an allegation, of course it's important that they do that properly, they do that in a timely fashion, and if they have decided not to take charges against somebody, that of course they tell them in a timely way where it's appropriate to do so.
So therefore when Sir Bernard Hogan Howe, the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police, the most powerful police officer in the country, admits that he cannot remember being told that Lord Britton had been cleared of a rape accusation. What do you make of that?
Well, these are matters, internal matters for the police as to how they deal with allegations.
Well, surely they're matters for the Home Secretary as well, aren't they?
Well, operational independence of the police, John, means that the Home Secretary doesn't get involved in investigating allegations.
But that man, no, we're not talking about investigating allegations. And he was cleared. The police did not tell him before he died, did not tell his wife either before he died that he had been cleared. Surely that is outrageous.
And as I've just said, if the police find that they have investigated an allegation and they're not taking it forward to charges, then they should tell people in a timely fashion, assuming that that's operationally sensible and operationally appropriate.
Does that raise questions then over the future of Bernard Hogan Howe? There are those who say that he should not have his term as commissioner renewed when it expires next September. There are those who say he's already been told it is going to be renewed. Do you have a view on that?
Well, these decisions will be taken about the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police will be taken in the right and proper way. And they're not decisions that are taken on a conversation with due respect to the Radio 4 Today programme, despite its significant role in our life of our nation. I'm not going to be talking about appointments to the Commissioner of the Metropolitan Police.
Well, let me ask you about, finally, a quick thought about this. We've been talking about it during the course of the programme. The Cabinet Secretary telling ministers they shouldn't talk about Heathrow, or rather airport, it comes down to Heathrow, airport expansion in the South East. What do you make of that? He's a civil servant. He's not a politician.
Well, first of all, I don't comment on leaked
documents. Did you get the letter?
I don't comment on leaked documents. But
well,
what
I'm asking
I do
whether
know,
you got a letter from him.
I don't comment on leaked documents.
I'm not
but
asking you to comment on leaked documents. I'm asking whether you got a letter from the Cabinet Secretary about this particular issue. Not asking you what was in it, just did you get a letter from him?
I am very clear of the importance of Cabinet ministers not making comments on this particular issue such that when a decision is taken, whichever decision is taken at the end, people can complain and say that somehow it was an a priori decision and therefore judicially review it.
We could take that as a rap on the knuckle, couldn't we?
This is an important decision, and it's right that cabinet ministers are not speaking about it publicly until the decision is taken.
So he's right to have told people, the cabinet ministers, not to talk about it.
Well, it's right that we're not to... Well, as I've just
explained... I misunderstood you. Forgive me. Sorry. I thought you were rapping the cabinet secretary's knuckle for doing this. You're not. You're saying he was quite right to do it.
It is absolutely right that cabinet ministers do not say anything which could prejudice the decision that is being taken and lead to judicial reviews of it.
It's for the cabinet secretary to tell them, given that he's a civil servant.
Well, John, I think you're making rather a mountain out of a molehill here.
Some of your colleagues are very cross about it.
Well, I think the important point here is that I think it is absolutely right, as indeed I can tell you, I told a constituent of mine on Friday that cabinet ministers are not commenting on this precisely because when the decision is taken, we want to make sure it's not subject to judicial review.
Home Secretary, thank you very much.